It's going down right now with the Josabar Podcast. Make sure y'all watch the Josabar Podcast ringing off right now. I am the KID, the Kid Capri. You know what it is. Salute. Block party action. Me.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the Josabot Podcast. I'm your host, Josabot Palacios, and we're here with sitting here with Miss Kelly Ray Taylor, a licensed professional counselor, a mother of three individual children, and a wonderful wife to an amazing artist. Now, Kelly, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. How are you today?
Thank you for having me. I'm doing well. How are you?
Just fine. I'm doing all right, Matt. But there's just a lot of things that are going out, that are really piquing my interest, that are really, you know, messing with my mind, sort of.
Okay.
You know, June is a great month, man. But it's also full of a lot of rain, a lot of stuff going on that we really need to take care of ourselves and our houses, you know. But I think the main thing that we need to take care of is going to be our minds. So thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate this opportunity to sit down with you, a licensed professional counselor. And again, caveat is going to be that this is not my session. This is we're going to be discussing about some topics, right? Like, not, this isn't a personal session, right?
Right.
Yeah, Kelly.
Yes. Yes.
Tell me a little bit about your background. I do understand that you went through UT systems. You went through Our Lady of the Lake systems. Did you get your undergrad at UT?
I did, yes. I have a BA in psychology from the University of Texas at Austin.
All right.
And that was a wonderful experience. That's where I really, really kind of found my passion for, you know, mental health.
Yeah, Austin's a weird place, but everybody's coming to Austin.
Yep, they are. I mean, I'm no longer there. I did live there for 6 years, though, while I matriculated, but I'm here now. So, but the Valley's also a wonderful place.
Now, you're talking about the Rio Grande Valley, the RGV.
Yes.
I've been seeing a lot of stickers. I mean, I recently went I had an outing, and there was stickers that said Poodle 956, like, everywhere. Like, is that a thing? Is that what people are doing now? Like, they're posting stickers?
You know, it's a culture down here. Of course, that's creating stereotypes in and of itself because, well, for one, it's in Spanish. So, you know, people think, okay, well, only, you know, Hispanics or Mexicans are a part of it, and it comes with its own mentality and attitudes and language, the way people talk and behave, and so it's become its own culture now. It is a thing, very much a thing.
Yeah. I mean, but that would lie true for any other area, I would assume. You know, every area in on the map would probably have its own culture, right?
Oh yeah, yes, of course. Absolutely.
So, you know, and so after UT, after getting your undergrad education, you proceeded to move forward and seek your master's at the University of Our Lady of the Lake. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes. And clinical mental health. That is a wonderful school, a private Catholic school. And I finished actually just last year.
Oh, congratulations. That's awesome. So, like, now that you're in, are you going into private practice, or are you working with organizational entities?
I am in private practice now, full-time. Yes.
Right on. So, like, when an individual starts going into that area or that realm, it's likely because, again, like you mentioned earlier, like, I would assume that you have this wanting to help communities.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And, you know, there are so many areas that have, you know, populations that are underserved for a myriad of reasons. Mm-hmm. And so kind of being, you know, a kind of support for those populations has kind of always been on the back of my mind. And I've had several other careers that I'm finally, you know, able to settle down in the one that I want, but I can help my community in the way that I want to.
Yeah. It's definitely something that can help us out. I know we're underserved. I feel like schools in itself are underserved when it comes to counseling. Is that something that you would agree with, or is that something that you feel that we're okay with?
I would agree with it for schools, sure. But they're under different parameters as well. So it's you know, they have basically one kind of counseling that they rely on, and that's solution-focused brief therapy. So a child comes in, or a student, even if they're 18, comes in, and you know, they've got to treat what's the issue on the spot, mm-hmm. help them find a solution. Okay, next. And so they're not really, you know, equipped to or allowed really to solve, you know, lifelong problems of theirs. They're not doing talk therapy or anything else. It's very brief intervals. And then they've got so many other things to focus on there as well.
Right. You mentioned talk therapy. Like, talk therapy, it's very, oh man, it's in itself in the sense that, you know, when people don't perceive it as important, oh, you're just talking away, you have no idea what I'm thinking or doing. It becomes something that is overlooked, I would assume.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing about talk therapy is it's usually done in the form of cognitive behavioral therapy, which is an orientation that kind of uses this triangle, a triangular approach. You know, you want to, there's thoughts and feelings and behaviors that are all connected, right? And if you change one cog in that triangle, then of course the others are going to turn too. So it's kind of creating change by changing your thoughts or the way that you look at things. And all of that is absolutely done in talk therapy.
Mm-hmm. You know, do you think Disney is onto something with that movie Inside Out?
You know, I actually went and saw that movie. I think it's a really great strategic move to kind of get kids, you know, especially everybody coming out of COVID and kids who were coming out of COVID, you know, that was really, really took a toll on adults. And that, you know, research shows us that kids are kind of about 2 years behind adults in how they express, you know, emotional turmoil. Mm-hmm. So coming out of COVID, you know, we're trying to do all this catching up with them academically, emotionally. And I think Disney kind of hit the, you know, they hit the nail on the head there. They're showing kids like, hey, anxiety's in here now, embarrassment's in here now, all of these emotions are going to be felt at home, at school, in your personal life, and they're kind of showing them how to manage those.
Yeah,
they're on to something for sure.
Yeah, man, I think there's definitely a lot to be said about the way people feel, the way children feel. I think we're in a point in our society where we really have to stop and listen to our kids. You know, I clearly remember a time where a conversation I was having with my youngest daughter, you know, we were talking about how people make others feel and so forth. And I remember she was maybe about 6 years old, and her immediate response to that conversation was, you know, it's because adults act this way. And we were going back and forth on a certain conversation regarding something that we call the doll test. If you're familiar with it, it's a test in which dolls are shown to children you know, and these dolls are of different skin color, and you know, like, these children have different mm-hmm. perceptions as far as what they are. Are they nice? Are they pretty? And so forth. Are they bad? Are they good? Etc. And mm-hmm. and the response mm-hmm. that I had from my young child at that time was, you know, it's because adults say these things. It's because adults act this way. And that's why mm-hmm. these kids are having these perceptions. And, you know, I think she might have been on to something. I think we are on to something when we say, hey, let's listen to our kids.
Yeah. Well, she's very intelligent at that age, because that's, you know, that's what they're teaching in grad school, mm-hmm. you know, that this mentality is not inherent. It's learned. Children are going to model behaviors that they're exposed to, that they see. And so I know about the test you're talking about, and you're right. These are like discriminatory opinions that the children have about these dolls, which they have these perceptions because the adults around them have these perceptions, mm-hmm. whether it's at school, at home, out in public, on TV, they just soak it up like a sponge and adopt those same perceptions.
Yeah. I think let's go back to 2020, man. That what a crazy time, right? 2020 was.
Yeah.
And yeah. There's a lot of people, you know, especially those in the healthcare field, who, I mean, there's no other way to put it other than PTSD. There's a lot of post-traumatic stress disorders that I feel is occurring, especially with those with the individuals that worked COVID in the hospital settings. Wow. Can you yeah. speak to any of that?
You know, personally, as well as in my job at the time, we saw it just across the board, death, isolation. These are huge, huge things that adults barely know how to navigate. And then the children themselves are exposed to it as well. Horrible things that we're just not, you know, without counseling or some kind of therapy, we're not going to manage them very well. But it was a horrible time, and a lot of things came from that we're still seeing this, you know, the aftermath in the office, at school. We're seeing it everywhere. Very much a time of isolation, I think, and that was the worst thing. Everybody was going through the same thing at the same time, yet we were all isolated. Yeah. And it makes you feel like, you know, you are connected, but you're also alone in it.
You know, I mean, being alone in your thoughts is scary. It's a slippery slope. And I think being a man in society in 2024, there's a lot of pressure. I mean, yeah, there's a lot to be said that being a female as well. But I mean, I feel like as we grow up, you know, you're given a lot of, you have to be the caretaker. You have to make sure that you do for your family, and you have to protect, and you have to do all these things, right? Like these are things that an individual is grown up in, into society. And, you know, I think what happens when you fail, right? When you don't meet those expectations of being a provider, of being able to pay the bills, like, you're compounding a sense of failure, and you're alone in your thoughts. And I think this is something that has to be said when we talk about being a man in society today. Like, I mean, is it okay to fail? Is the main question that I have.
Right, right. So, I mean, and you're talking about all these different roles that a man has to play. There, you know, are expectations of them, like you said, a caretaker, a provider. And these are all kind of, based on, you know, traditional masculine ideals that that encourage like self-reliance, emotional stoicism, where, you know, you should be able to take a hit and keep going. What happens when you don't, though, right? So that's when you start seeing things like sleeplessness, you know, insomnia, changes in your in someone's behavior or diet, you know, kind of self-destructing behaviors. So you have to kind of seek out therapy for that, because if it gets to a point where it's interrupting, you know, your daily functioning, and maybe you're not able to go to work because you're still drunk from the previous night, which could be from, you know, any number of things, death in the family, or, you know, you lost your job, anything like that can lead to then depression, anxiety, and we start self-medicating.
You said that, and my mind immediately goes to like the bartender saying, "Hey man, are you okay? Are you all right? Like, I noticed that you just had this one beer and you're ordering another one. Like, hold on, let me talk to you for a minute."
Right, right, exactly. These very self-destructive behaviors, you know, is what you start to see when you're not addressing things like that, and that comes out, you know, in part of the stigma, you know, of seeking mental health, right?
Yeah.
And you know, you don't want to announce that you've lost your job. You don't want people knowing that you're going through a divorce. So you're trying to heal yourself, but that's really hard to do if you're not trained to do it, which most people aren't. So they do need help.
So, man, I mean, we can go for hours talking about all those things that you just talked about.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot. I mean, but what adds to all of this is just, you know, like, you have to get yourself out of that hole that you're in mentally, emotionally, physically. But man, how do you do it, right? Like, that, I think that's the biggest question here that we're talking about, because, you know, like, as you mentioned it, traditionally, like, you don't want to talk about these things. You don't want to put it out there that you just got a divorce. You don't want to put it out there that for whatever reason you got let go. You know, like, there's always a fear. But the fear, I feel, goes back to the unknown. And so part of getting through this is having an awareness and an understanding that, you know what, this too shall pass. And right. the moment there's an awakening and an understanding of that too shall pass, you know, there then comes the day after, the light, so to speak. But man, like, it's very self-destructive. It's miserable. Oh man, you don't want to get up. You could care less. You don't want to talk to anybody, or nobody's calling. Cause reality is that I have found, nobody's gonna care as much as you're going to care.
Nobody. And the isolation and withdrawal that come with those experiences make you feel like nobody could possibly understand. But it's not so much the experience, because everybody's experience is unique to each individual, right? Mm-hmm. But it's the emotion that is universal there. So maybe, you know, maybe you have an individual who's, you know, experienced something so rough, you know, maybe a cheating spouse or something like that. And nobody can possibly understand what that feels like. Well, maybe no one around them does, but what comes with, what emotions come with that? Desperation, sadness, depression, anger, right? And those things we do all feel. So it's okay to reach out, because you can't expect that someone's going to know what you're going through, but they've definitely felt what you're going through.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, an individual who's gone through experiences can get through a lot of these things, but I think the biggest need comes to individuals who haven't had those experiences. And these are going to be your individuals that are barely graduating from high school, I feel. The individuals that are trying to go into the college, university setting at this point. I mean, you're talking about individuals who are between that demographic of 20 to 25, 20, you know, maybe even into the 30s.
Right.
And they're trying to figure it out as much as we do, but there's something to be said about where it is that they're searching for these answers. And yeah, there's a phone, and yes, there's AI, and there's a whole bunch of sorts of tools out there that you and I didn't have. But I feel that the need for conversation, as you mentioned, talk therapy, far supersedes a phone.
Right. Yeah. So those, you know, that age group, you know, and the things that you mentioned sound a lot like this adjusting to the unknown. That's kind of the really big problem, this period of adjustment. And the talk therapy, yes, it is very helpful because they are heard and felt, and it's hard. And talk therapy is not meant to be done very quickly. It's something that can take weeks, 2 years. For some individuals, and that's okay. That's what we're trained for. Now, going back to, you know, over the phone, there's a really good benefit to the phone, and that's because some people will not walk into an office, whether they're well known in the community or just, you know, maybe they know someone around there, or maybe they're not able to go in because of illness, physical disability, who knows. So in those situations, you know, a phone is really helpful. And also because you don't need an appointment for the phone. You can just call and talk. And I think they've kind of, you know, on a national level have understood that people need that instant connection. So in 2022, they actually changed that national crisis lifeline. They changed it from the 10-digit phone number to 3 digits.
What is that?
Because people only 988. Okay. And they do English, they do Spanish 24 hours a day. And you can call or text.
You mean to tell me that now all an individual needs to do if they're having like a crisis is take their phone and dial 988?
That's correct.
That's it?
That's it.
Wow. Man, right. I mean, I'm 40 years old and I had no idea about this 988. I mean, and I think you and I had a conversation previously where I said, you know, like, man, it's, you walk into an office and the first thing they tell you is like, hey, do you have your insurance card? And, you know, the response is, yeah, I do. And, oh, well, we're sorry. We don't take this insurance. But, you know, we can't see you right now. But you can make an appointment and I'll see you in about 3 months. And my question immediately is like, well, wait a minute. Like, what if like there's like a huge, huge thing that I really want to talk about like right now before I go do something stupid, right? Then the response was, well, if it's that case, then you go to the hospital, sir. And I'm like, yeah, but I just need to talk to somebody. So, right. So you're telling me at that point, I could have easily just picked up the phone and dialed 988 and that's it.
Right. Right, that's correct. And, you know, that's a national line.
Uh-huh.
And they are highly trained counselors, the same as the same position that I am. And they know what to do, what to say in crisis situations. And like I said, they do English and Spanish, and they also have options for LGBTQ as well as veterans. And if you're wanting those options, if you're wanting to talk to somebody specialized in those areas. So it's a very useful number. And then, of course, we have a local one for those of us in South Texas, of course. That's a local number that is helpful because you can call in a time of crisis and also set up an appointment to go in once they've kind of de-escalated things and you're okay for now and you're ready to set an appointment. So for the Valley, I know, you know, we've got two really good options right there.
Wow. I mean, I'm just blown away with the 988 thing. Like I'm looking it up right now, and it's, like you mentioned, it's a nationwide service providing free and confidential support for anyone experiencing mental health-related distress, including thoughts of suicide, mental health or substance use crisis, or any other kind of emotional distress. Wow. And this is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week across the United States. People can call, text, or chat online to connect with trained crisis counselors.
Right.
When did this come into
existence? Right, and you don't need an insurance card. I'm not sure when it started, but I do know it was a very long number before that, you know, we would give to people, mm-hmm. but who's programming a 10-digit number? I mean, and or trying to memorize it on the spot, very difficult. Or if you're in the midst of, let's say, an anxiety attack or a crisis situation,
yeah,
you know, that's a lot of numbers to dial. I think they wanted to condense it and really simplify it to something as easy as 911.
Yeah.
So you've got 988. It's an emotional emergency.
That reminds me of, do you remember the Little Rascals, the movie? Quick, what's the number to 911?
Yes.
How should I know?
Yes.
I love that movie, man.
Yeah. Well, thank you for aging us, but.
So what's the number to 988?
It is as simple as that. Wow. And you can text as well, which is really cool because, you know, maybe you just, some people are crying so hard they can't get words out. Yeah. They can text, and that's a lifeline right there for them.
You know, it's, man, 2024, wow. There's just so much right now, especially when it comes to social media. Like, it's one of those things where, like, I feel that you have these individuals, and not just boys, not just men, just, you know, women as well, or any other subculture, where all of a sudden, you know, something will say something about you on social media, and, you know, you're out in the court of public opinion, and something's going on, and all of a sudden, boom, you've blown up. You know, oh, man, like people think that their life is over after something like that, right? And
yeah.
I think that's one of the biggest things that we really, really have. I know I was just reading Supreme Court talked about, they just had a ruling about being able to tell technology companies to remove posts. Did you hear about that?
I didn't. What is this now?
There was a ruling recently. I was just reading it. Let me look it up for a second. About taking down posts that they don't agree with or something.
Okay, so this is like a political policing of social media?
Yeah, I think the Supreme Court in a 6-3 decision upheld the administration's ability to communicate with social media companies to request the removal of content considered misinformation. The court determined that the plaintiffs, which included 2 states and 5 residents, lacked the legal standing to pursue their lawsuit against the federal government. This was a significant factor in the court's decision to overturn the lower court's ruling. There are concerns with regards to First Amendment. The ruling addressed concerns about whether the government's actions violated the First Amendment. The court concluded that the government requests to social media platforms did not constitute coercion or threats of legal repercussions, thus not breaching free speech rights. You know, that's a little bit about what I was talking about, where, you know, there's this post, and, you know, the person thinks that their day is over, their life is over, like.
Right. And if someone doesn't agree with that, that could kind of remove their platform that they're relying on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I see that. And then they don't have the space to do that anymore. And that can be detrimental for some, like you said. You know, they need to get this out, because for them, it could mean the world. Correct. The world is over for them, because they may not know how to cope with that. And if, you know, if you remove something like that for someone, you know, what are you really doing?
Mm-hmm.
Forcing them to keep it inside and bottle things up. And again, we go back to maladaptive coping, self-destructive behaviors. So it's harmful. It can become harmful for individuals if they're not able to, you know, to release anything that needs to be released.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where also, you know, talk therapy would benefit as well.
Yeah, there's like I said, having that realization, that understanding of, hey, sabes que, it's gonna pass, you know, but what's gonna be the plan moving forward? I think that's what a lot of people want to know. Like, how do we get past it? How is it that individuals, not just men, but, you know, and I go back to men because it is June. It is a month that apparently has the awareness for men's mental health. Nowadays, every month is an awareness month.
Yeah. Overlapping. There are several things in one month too.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of things. I mean, man, May is bombarded with a whole bunch of things. I really do not like May.
Yeah, I tell you, we're having to make t-shirts for everything now.
Yeah. Only ones benefiting are the Cricut designers more than anything.
The Cricut owners are banking. Yes, maybe we're in the wrong business.
Yeah, we need to stop talking about the Cricut people. We need to start becoming Cricut people.
They've got it figured out.
They really do. I mean, they have created a service where, man, and now they have TikTok shops now. Like, I can't watch TikTok without it offering me something and be like, hey, you like this shirt? You can now buy it here. And I have bought a few TikTok shirts, but, you know, now there's this conversation going of like, hey, it's not allowed in the state of Texas. Like, what is going on with these people?
It's political. It's usually political. And to go back to kind of, you know, circle back a little bit, I did want to comment on something you mentioned, because it was important, I think. You know, you said people kind of get this information. They're like, okay, something is wrong. I recognize that. How do we go about treating it? What do we do from here? And that's something I find is a huge question mark. It's such a huge mystery to some. And I wanted to just make it clear, you know, how counseling works, because many people don't know if they haven't had counseling previously.
Mm-hmm.
When they first go in, they're going to do a bunch of paperwork, you know. When you actually see the counselor or therapist, whoever you're seeing, the first session is going to be intake. So you're talking about a lot of personal questions. They might be triggering. You have to be prepared for that. And the whole session will be intake. The next session will probably be treatment planning. And that's where you set your goals. And they're not just, okay, what do you want? What do you hope to accomplish? Like, why are you here? It's much deeper than that.
Yeah.
You know, it's literally setting a plan. What we're going to do to get there. What are our long-term goals, your short-term goals? What techniques are we going to use? What interventions are we going to use? What are you comfortable with? And how are you going to know when you've achieved them? What is life going to look like for you? What will have changed that'll tell you, hey, I think I met that goal. And then the third session starts the talk therapy, where you start incorporating and putting that plan into action. So there is a flow, an order out of all of it. So, you know, there is a degree of patience that is involved on both sides.
Patience.
We want to get down to the nitty gritty and help right away.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, housekeeping is usually done first. And some people do come into the office and they're, you know, very emotional.
Yeah.
And we've got to set aside enough time to account for that happening. Because we're most counselors and all the ones I know and myself included will address that emotional need right there on the spot. We're not going to just, you know, get into all the nitty gritty and ignore what you have going on right now.
Yeah,
we'll
address
it
move on. I think we have to have an understanding and I'm talking about the entities, the therapists and the counselors. You mentioned you have to have a lot of patience. I would agree. I mean, if you don't have the patience, I then what are you doing in that profession? Because I'm laughing because I tend to often think of like, man, what if you get somebody like me as soon as I walk in? You know what I'm saying? Like I need that gratification. I need that immediate like, yo, are you listening to me? Like. And and I often wonder, like, is that really like, I feel that that's kind of what's happening now in 2024. And again, that's just from my personal perspective, but I strongly feel that, you look at the shows that are happening, you look at the posts, you know, we're filled with a lot of Larry Davids. Where, you know, they're easily triggered.
Right.
And so.
Right.
You know, how do you deal with that? And why have we come to this point of immediate gratification?
Well, it's just the day and age that we live in. I think, you know, everything has been so modernized. Everything is so technological. Things happen very quickly than they used to.
Yeah.
Technology mostly has probably played the biggest role in that.
Yeah.
But I will draw a line here in the difference between insurance, like you mentioned earlier, and private pay. So, you know, you said people come in and it's this whole process where they're like, well, what's your insurance? Do you take it? No. Where do you go from there?
Right.
You know, and it seems very limiting for a person who's, you know, in crisis, or even if they're not in crisis, but they need help, you know.
Right.
And that's where private pay is beneficial. Now, it sounds private pay. Okay, yes, that means paying out of pocket, whether it's on your debit card, credit card, or cash. However, it does have its benefits. For one, it offers privacy. When you go through insurance, if you're, you know, depending on the arena of work that you're in, that diagnosis will get reported and, you know, well, maybe not the diagnosis, but the fact that you're seeking counseling, right? Because everything has to get approved. In private pay, nobody's reporting to anybody anything. Even if we were to diagnose an individual who is paying privately, that doesn't go anywhere outside of our file.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only known to the individual. Also, there are things that insurance doesn't cover, like career counseling. If you don't know what kind of job you're supposed to be in, or you keep failing job after job after job, or something related to your career, and you're trying to pay with insurance, they won't cover it. You don't have to worry about that with private pay. Anger management is another one.
Mm-hmm.
Insurance won't cover that. So there are benefits. And another one, which is what kind of was my point, private pay really allows flexibility and convenience for somebody. If you go through an office or practice and say, I've got to get in, well, we don't have anything for 2 months out. And you'll hear that a lot. private pay. You find a counselor who does private pay, they can book you probably within that week because you're only dealing with the one person. And, you know, because it's private pay, they're able to process everything a lot faster, mm-hmm. and they can skip a lot of that red tape. So there are certain times that a person does want to pay privately, which as well is not as much as insurance. Insurance payments are very high, and private pay usually is a percentage of that. Mm-hmm. So you're not ever going to pay as much as the charges when they're charging your insurance.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's...
I hope that helps.
It really does. I mean, it's one of those things where, like, those that seek it want to know... It's almost like we're pulling the curtain a little bit just to have an understanding of what our options are. You know what I'm saying? Right. Because oftentimes, I mean, as you get older and you've acquired some type of health insurance or medical coverage for yourself and your family, like, you know, you go through the process of enrollment, but I would say that the majority of the people, they only hear about it when they're enrolling into their plan. After that, I mean, life happens. Life consumes every aspect of their life. And you know, to read the fine print, to look at what coverages they have, they really have to make an exerted attempt to go back and see what their coverages are, I feel.
Right. And what I tell people generally is, because a lot of times they'll hear, well, call the back of your insurance card and see what they cover. Okay. But then that's specific to down to the practice even and who the doctors are and what kind of licenses they hold and those kind of things. Mm-hmm. my suggestion would be if you are seeking counseling and you call a practice and ask them, I have Blue Cross Blue Shield. Do you take that? I have Medicaid. Do you take Medicaid? And the person on the other line is going to ask you the pertinent question. What type of Medicaid is it? Do you have a PCP? Is it an HMO? They know the questions to ask you. Right. And as long as you've got your card in front of you, you can find out right there from the comfort of your home if they're going to be able to see you or not and have it covered. So I wouldn't waste so much time, you know, going in and, you know, because it takes a lot, especially if you're already going through something, to have to go into a place. You know, and you're putting yourself out there. It's a very vulnerable thing to do in the first place. And then to be rejected on top of that isn't going to make you feel any better.
Nobody wants me. Nobody even bothers to listen to me. Not even my insurance company. Not even my practice wants me. Man.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. So
call the 1-800 number. Hey, they can't help me either. I'm talking to an automated system.
right. And those things. Okay. Yeah. Those, by the time you're done, you need therapy.
Yeah. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Well, yes. So that's what I would say. I would definitely say if you have a practice in mind, call them and ask them if they take your insurance. That's it. That would be my biggest advice. If they don't and you still want to go there, you do have the private pay option.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, going back to what we were talking about earlier, like individuals seeking, like, hey, how do I deal with my problems? I mean, I think we've hit a couple of items here where we talked about, like, you know, like, having that awareness, that understanding that you can seek some counseling, you know, that you can seek some type of therapist. But if that's not the case, you know, there's that number to call, 988. But,
right.
You know, there's just a lot of things that can cause. And I wanted to go back to the whole theme of how we grew up. You know, you and I, if I'm understanding this correctly, are from the same area code. The 956.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in a Mexican household, And it's very, very, very much things are done a certain way, in the sense of, like, you have to do this, you know, this is the way it's always been done, etc. You know, like, when there's no other option other than this is the way it is, yeah, it can cause a little bit of a mental anguish, because I think everybody's finding out there are options, right?
Right, right, of course. And, you know, seeking treatment, seeking counseling is not the only thing that a person can do for themselves. Mm-hmm. It may not be a good fit for someone. It may not be ideal, for reasons that I won't go into. But there are other things that they can do. One of them is medication. If you're not, you know, really sure where to go and you have a regular doctor, mention it to your PCP. Mm-hmm. Hey, I think I might be depressed. Is there, you know, an eval you can do real quick, or is there something you can prescribe for that? And they are able to. They're not, they're not therapists, but they're able to prescribe something. Mm-hmm. And they are definitely aware, you know, start at the lowest dose and work up or down. They're able to manage medication in that sense. If that's not for you either, physical activity. Physical activity is great. And that can come in the form of anything: walking, jogging, disc golf, hunting, fishing, soccer, anything you can think of.
Right.
Being active. Being active reduces depression and anxiety. And men, specifically men, who are inactive are actually 60% more likely to suffer from depression than males who are active.
Run that by me one more time.
Men who are inactive, so uh-huh. they're not, you know, engaging themselves in anything physical, uh-huh. are 60% more likely to suffer from depression than males who are active. So if you can do anything, I mean, getting up and moving is very key.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm lucky enough that I have an Apple Watch, right? But, you know, this Apple Watch is worse than anything that I've ever had. Like, it'll give me an alert, and it'll tell me, hey, get off your fat ass and get up and move. Like, you have to move right now, Jay. Like, it literally talks to me that way, man. Or at least I feel it talks to me that way. Like, you know, it's
right.
It's
that's
crazy.
What it's saying.
Yeah,
it's that's
crazy.
The message.
I got
well, and you are fortunate enough to have that. But what if you're not, right?
Right.
There are other things you can do. You can put a reminder in your phone. Most people do have smartphones. Mm-hmm. You can put a reminder, put a timer. Hey, get up and walk the dog. Or if you don't have a dog, just get up and walk.
Right.
Maybe schedule something with your friends, which brings me to another way that you can, you know, achieve that mental health without treatment. Social support. Lean on your friends for social support. You know, I remember when I first started grad school, and for this, you know, they were like, how do you talk to people like this? How do you, you know, how do you get past that imposter syndrome? How do you manage this? And, you know, the thing the professor said that really kind of put me at ease was, you've been doing this your whole life. If you've ever been a friend to anyone, you've already been doing this. You've already been giving advice. You've already been helping them, like, search for answers, find answers in themselves.
Yeah.
Find strength, you know. You've already been doing this. Keep doing it. We're just going to show you, you know, how to do it better. But social support is going to be really big if you are not able or not willing to get, you know, counseling. Yeah, that's a big one. And another one is education, or what counselors will call psychoeducation. And that's just learning about your symptoms. If somebody says, "Well, I think I'm having an anxiety attack," and they have no plan to go to the doctor or counselor for it,
yeah,
research it. And I don't mean, you know, like Google, because you don't really want to Google things, but research in other ways. Ask your doctor, "Hey, can you give me some information on anxiety? Can you?" Okay, so start looking through those things, reliable sources.
Yeah.
And find out, oh, okay, this is normal, not going to kill me. Because that's what an anxiety attack feels like, right? It feels like you're dying. But the more you educate yourself on the symptoms that you're having, the more you're able to talk yourself through it when it's happening. Like, okay, and this is a technique that I taught one of my clients recently. You know, she was very concerned because her heart was going so fast, she wasn't able to keep up with it. But we started clocking those and timing them and seeing how fast it was. Okay, so your heart's racing at 120.
Right.
Your heart has beat faster than that before when you're playing softball, when you're running. You're not dying. It just feels that way because you know you're not doing anything that it should be that elevated. But it doesn't mean you're going to die. So let's start, you know, working on ways to get it down. So just kind of educating yourself, you know, okay, what's this number? Is this normal? You know, gaining information about yourself, what the symptoms look like, when it's time to call a doctor, when it's time to seek treatment. That's helpful. Knowledge is power.
Absolutely. I think you hit the nail right on the head, but I would say also, like, be weary of going down rabbit holes, especially the wrong rabbit holes. I'm an individual that's guilty of that, where, you know, like, something's going on and I'll do my research and I'll start looking at certain things, and you know, and I know of individuals too that will do the exact same thing, and it causes more harm than good, because all of a sudden, hey, you know, they feel they're dying, but it was simply something else, for whatever it might be.
But
yeah, it's a scary situation once you start seeing, well, this too can, and my response to that is always this, like, turn on a commercial to a drug wait, you know, look at, can cause rapid heart rate, you know, can cause lack of sleep, can cause this and that, you know, like there's all these risks involved with anything. And I always say this, like, I mean, I can walk outside and be hit by a car in an instant. I mean, it's a risk. I'm taking the risk of going outside of my door. But that's me, you know, but I don't know about everybody else, but I have that awareness, but I think once we understand and realize that there's that understanding that anything can happen at any given time, we get past a whole bunch of things. And you know, for what it's worth, it helps. It can help you mentally or not. You decide. I mean, that's something that at our schools, you know, hey, the choice is yours or not. You know what I'm saying? Like in the morning announcements, make it a great day. The choice is yours. It is. It truly is.
It is. Yeah. And I guess part of the problem is when you don't know what your choices are.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the discourse we're having now. Mm-hmm. What are the choices? So that you make the one that's the right fit for you. It's not the same for everybody. It's not a one size fits all. Counseling is so different across the board. There are so many different orientations. So, you know, shopping around for a counselor that's right for you is really, really important to ensure that it's successful.
Yeah.
Now, I would also be careful with self-diagnosing, because like you said, people can, you know, jump on the internet or their phone and say, "Oh, all of these symptoms sound like me. I'm dying." And
I know.
That's a very easy thing to do. Don't do that.
You know, I would I'm sorry, but I would also say, like, you know, removing yourself from those environments. Like, how many times have you heard this? Hi, good morning, Kelly. How are you? Oh, you know, it's one of those days. Oh, you know, so busy. I'm always busy. I got a lot of work to do. I feel like it's crazy. Oh my God. Like,
yeah.
Stop and listen to those responses. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That is negative thinking. And negative thought stopping is a natural intervention that we use and practice and model with our clients who have, you know, a tendency to respond in that manner. If you constantly have yourself in this state of negativity, it's going to spill over into other areas of your life, right? Like, oh man, I always have bad luck. Oh, it's just a Monday again, so not good. I'm not at home. You know, those kind of thoughts eventually affect you and the way that you respond to people, your kids, your spouse, your coworkers, right? So yeah. They're replacing that, you know, and we do that. We'll teach clients how to replace those thoughts. But negative thought stopping in itself takes so much practice because it's hard to do. If you've been like this your entire life,
yeah,
you know, it's gonna take some sessions to kind of undo it, basically.
Yeah,
and undoing it is just part one. Replacing it's part two.
It's hard. It's hard. I'm telling you, I give a lot of praise to those individuals that are just really peppy, really happy, really positive. I'm like, what's wrong with you?
And you know what?
That's not normal.
You're not wrong.
That's not normal.
You're not wrong. It's not. Now, some people are energetic, and that's fine. That's fine. But there's this new thing that I was reading about a couple months ago. And I think it was called positive toxicity or toxic positivity is what it was. And that is when people believe you should be happy all the time.
Yeah.
And not just for themselves, but that you should. So if you're sad or not happy, they will tell you, no, cheer up. Like this is fine. This is nothing. But sometimes people need to feel what they're feeling.
Yeah.
They need to live in that moment, to cycle all the way through it,
you know, and
because that can be harmful if they don't.
That's something that's another reason why people don't go to therapy. You know, because there's that perception of, so now you're going to tell me that I can't feel a certain way.
Okay. And that would be a misconception.
Yeah.
And that's a misconception because any way that you feel is okay. Mm-hmm. That's our philosophy, probably.
Yeah.
I would be safe to say that. Any way that you feel is okay. Unless you don't want to feel that way, then let's change it. Let's work on it.
I say this, and I just recently heard this term. Let's joust. And I really, really like it. For the mere fact of we're not arguing, we're not battling, we're just going to talk about it. Let's see where it takes us. Let's see if we can get an understanding. I want to joust with you mentally, you know, and I think once we have that ability to be able to have a partner that we can joust with, like there's a lot of growth that can be had.
Right.
Because I'm not judging you. I'm not going to judge you. It is what it is. Like, we're just going to place it. We're just going to talk about it and see where it takes us. And I think that's something that as a community, as society, as human beings, we fail at because of the judgment. What are they going to say?
People are very opinionated. Right, right.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, conversations like this open up more that are conducive to understanding and undoing those misconceptions, you know, like expecting a counselor to tell you that it's wrong to feel what you're feeling, mm-hmm. those kinds of things. You know, it these are things that we need to kind of abandon and realize that everybody is right in their own right. But we have to be respectful of that. And when we are, you start having, you know, like you said, you start removing argument, you start removing defiance and things that really get in the way of growth. Yeah. And moving forward and healing really is what we're talking about here. You're not going to heal if someone is opposing you or you're feeling, you know, some kind of blocking energy from them, whether it's verbal or otherwise. Well, removing those roadblocks really, really help.
Yeah. And deep down, I think what ends up happening is it's always this mentality of, you're not going to beat me. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm going to win this one. And that right there, not everything has to be a competition. You know, there's healthy, right. There's healthy competition. There's academic competition. There's physical competition. But not everything has to be a competition. And if it is a competition, it's you versus you. I feel.
Right. Right. And I think you're right in saying that. I can get behind that. Yeah. Life isn't a game. It's not a game. We're all going through it at our own pace, and there shouldn't really be like any advantage or, you know, like you're saying, you know, this mentality of winning or losing, or I mean, we're trying to get through the best that we can, mm-hmm. you know, and achieve that mental wellness to be able to get through the best that we can. And, you know, for some of us, that's, you know, leaving our legacy with our children and, you know, what are we going to do good in the world or for the world or for ourselves, you know?
Yeah. Like,
it's not a competition though.
It's like, I mean, you see these things online and somebody has a really bad day and somebody has a really bad incident that occurred and so forth. And, you know, like, There's this, I can't believe so and so said. You know, hold on, let me start rolling up my napkin porque se va a poner bueno el chisme. Fíjate que this and this happened and this and that. You know, like you start into that whole phase of gossiping rather than saying, you know what, let me pick up my phone, let me call that person, let me see how can I help that person. Maybe they just need to talk to somebody. Maybe they just need somebody to lean on. You know, it's hard. Living in 2024 is hard. You know, everything is piling on, bills are piling on, and we got to figure out a way to get out of this debt. And if you don't, you know, next, so to speak.
Right. Those same, you know, those core beliefs start setting in, like I'm a failure.
Yeah.
I'm a loser. Right. And those are hard to change when you're building up evidence against yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, I lost my job. How can I possibly not be a loser? You know, though, when you start building evidence against yourself, it's easy to form these core beliefs that will just continue to tear you down. And so I think maybe what you're going into now is, you know, being more empathetic towards people instead of treating it as gossip or, you know, just something to talk about. You know, can we help? That should be our first reaction.
Yeah. And sadly, you know, like here's the other piece to all of this. There is no monetary reward for helping. Let me say it again. There's no cash value to help somebody.
Yeah. That's very loaded. And it's true. And the reward is different. And it's something that almost has to be learned to be appreciated. Because when you are able to help someone and you have like a truly, you know, this altruism kind of intention, you do get something back. And it's not easily explained, but once you feel that, it's life changing.
Yeah.
And it's something that we accomplish in therapy as well. When you know you're making that difference, and that's, you know, part of what drove me towards it. When you know you're making that difference, and you either, you know, that the person tells you or you see it, everything is worthwhile all of a sudden. All of it, all the hard work, tuition, everything has led you to this moment, and it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very humanizing.
Yeah. The humanization effect is important. I mean, I strongly feel a certain way about that, and it's a good thing. You know, often the conversation that I tend to have in these respects go back to, but does it make you happy? You know, if you were to take a sample study of individuals that are nearing the end of life, you know, they're not worried about how much money they accumulated. They're not worried about all the properties that they invested in. The common conversation lies with regret and happiness.
Yeah, that's a big one, and I'll kind of add to that a little. For a while, I was working at a hospital, so it was the population were people who have cancer. Mm-hmm. And I still do see some clients now who have cancer, and they're, you know, in different stages. But the ones who are, you know, at the end of life stages are talking about the same things you're talking about, you know, regret, happiness, what are they going to leave behind, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And those things are, maybe they weren't as important to them, or they weren't able to see them as important earlier in life before they knew, you know, that they had a terminal disease, a terminal illness.
Mm-hmm.
But now that they are, you know, in those end of life stages, I love that they're coming to therapy, because instead of them, you know, being in these stages feeling like, well, I didn't, you know, leave such and such behind. What did I do with my life? You know, I wasn't even happy, and I hurt this person. And instead of them leaving and staying with those ideas, they're in therapy. And we're saying, you know, let's make a plan to change this. You're here right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's work on that regret. And happiness, you can create. Let's do this. And we start digging into those things.
Yeah.
And it makes a very big difference for them.
You know, and I think let's take it a step further, because you know, we're talking about how we can find that happiness. It's not gonna take somebody else to create happiness for you. The realization is that you have to create the happiness for yourself. And I think that's something that we fail to understand as a society. You know, you take a look at the marriages. You take a look at individuals going into that partnership of marriage, right? Something that is considered sacred and holy and so forth. And that's cool. That's the perception of society, and that's the perception of how we move forward, you know, with a partner. But you don't need your partner to make you happy, so to speak. Like, you have to dig deep inside to create it. And I think that's a conversation that individuals fail to understand. And you know, like, hey, if I tell my wife, hey, I'm going to go for a run, I'm going to go to the gym, I got to go. I'll be back, right? But that's me having that conversation with her that that's my happiness, that's my happy place. I like that's gonna help me be a better partner, so that I so that we can continue to have those conversations, right? You know, and or she'll tell me, hey, I need to do some sewing, or hey, I need to go do some couponing or some shopping. That's her happy place. I get it. You know, now other people will probably tell you is like, well, dude, you're doing it all wrong. You gotta start doing some couponing with her, so that way y'all can both do it, and y'all can and you can, you know, compound your interest there with the happiness. Well, that's all good and everything, but we respect our spaces. That works for me and her.
And marriage is a dance that, you know, there's two people in it.
Yeah.
Not just one.
Yeah.
And it's important to not lose yourself in a marriage. And both partners, you know, should be happy to understand this. You have your identity as a spouse, as a couple. And then you have your identity as an individual. And so it's not just one.
Sometimes it is. Have you seen Facebook?
Sometimes it is. And let me tell you, that, I mean, there, you know, that's usually some kind of an indicator, but communication is so key. And I love hearing that, you know, your wife understands that you go out for a run, and that's how you stay happy and healthy.
Yeah.
And she goes off and does couponing, and you understand that that's how she stays happy and healthy. So you have your separate identities, but you're all also together in this marriage with that identity.
Right.
And that is how that's a really important component, because you're communicating. You're communicating what you need. Communicating your needs and your respective of each other's.
That's a beautiful way to end all this, because again, I think we're ending with the whole theme of communication, which is the most important thing, especially for any type of mental health that individuals are going through. You know, we're not psychics. We're not here to, we haven't gotten to the piece where we're able to diagnose each other based upon the blink of an eye, and be able to scroll in our minds and search WebMD what's happening with us. So until we get to that point, until we're able to go to that piece of life, of existence, where it, you know, we're able to have a little scanning effect, and so-and-so has, you know, this and that. Like, until we get to that point, it's important for us to conversate and with somebody that we trust. You know, I think right there is the main thing. It could be one person, it could be two people, it could be a group. You know, you decide. But if I'm hearing you correctly, communication is important.
It is. And modes of communication as well, because we all have a different love language, right? So like you said, maybe that's in a group. Maybe it's just one person. Maybe we feel comfortable in different settings. How we receive love and how we send it out can be two totally different ways as well. But communicating that to others so that we're making them aware of how we can be helped, and being also aware of how they would like help, is going to kind of establish that empathy we were talking about earlier. How can I help you? Here's how you can help me. Opening those lines of communication, whether that's with a counselor, your best friend, your parents, all of that support is necessary.
Yeah, sure is. Kelly Ray Taylor, thank you so much for stepping in. I really appreciate the time that you've presented to us. We'll definitely be on the next episode, and we'll definitely invite you for another one if you choose to. Thank you so much once again. Thank you so much, Kelly Ray Taylor.